And welcome into the Wednesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Connor Newt. Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning. Joe Rex Road remains on vacation. He will be back next week if all things continue to go well with Joe Rex Road and his recovery from gout. So we'll see what happens on that front. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Taking your thoughts all show long, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Connor Newt, welcome into the program.
Hello.
How are we doing? What's going on?
I'm a lot more awake than the last time I was on this program behind that glass, but it's my debut in studio with you.
Yes, it's a big day.
A massive day.
Big day in the life of Connor Newt, I'm sure. We did talk about you yesterday, about how last time you were doing the morning show, as the week went on, I thought you were going to die. But you powered through, and here we are again.
Yeah.
And you'll be with us tomorrow as well.
I will, yes. In a different role.
In a different role.
Regardless, I will still be here. So, yes, I'm awake this morning. No coffee needed, nothing.
That's good.
I'm good. I'm here.
That's very good. Ian Safar, good morning. How are you doing? What's
good morning.
Going on?
Oh, I'm doing great. Another beautiful sunrise today on the way in.
It is.
So, yeah, doing great. Looking forward to breaking down a busy presser yesterday from Mr. Barry Trotz.
A very busy presser and an interesting interview that he had with Jared Stillman as well. If you missed that, I would encourage you, as the day goes on, to go check that out. We will have Caroline Fenton with us at 6:45. We'll get into some college ball and a little bit of Titans with her. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, who was at Barry Trotz's press conference yesterday, along with myself, will be there at 8 o'clock, and we'll get into some of that with him as well. But a lot going on today's program. So let's start there. Barry Trotz addressing the media yesterday and then did about, I don't know, almost 30 minutes with Jared Stillman on the program.
I think maybe just around there, yeah.
Yeah, right. A lot of talking that he did yesterday, and several different things that I found pretty interesting came up throughout the course of all of that yesterday. But the immediate focus for the Predators is on the draft, and we are 2 days away from the NHL draft, 2 days away from the fifth overall pick, and what hopefully ends up being a franchise-changing type of player for the Predators. And Barry Trotz did say in his press conference yesterday, not that this was any sort of breaking news, that it's pretty likely that a forward is going to be that pick. So I was glad he put that out there. If Matthew Schaefer, the defenseman who's expected to go number one overall, isn't available, I don't really know which other defenseman would be in consideration there, and it doesn't look like the Predators will go that route. So it will be a forward come up at number five overall. And the question is, all right, well, what type of forward are they looking for? Could it be a very skilled winger in a guy like Porter Martone, who is a prospect that a lot of people are really excited about and could be an elite scorer in the league? Or could it be the ever elusive number one center that the Predators have been missing out on really for the entirety of their franchise? And Trotz was on with Stillman yesterday and kind of nailed down what his preference would be when the draft rolls around coming up on Friday. Here's what Barry Trotz had to say with Jared yesterday.
My preference would be, I think they're harder to come by. My preference would be, for sure. But yeah, at the same time, as I said, you know, a guy like Porter Martone, he's a pretty good player. And you don't want to make the mistake of losing a good player. We're going to spend the next couple of days just deliberating on that. Jeff Kelty and his staff have done a really good job. We've done the combine. We've done the all the meetings, you know, even with the players. I feel that there's not much between, like I said, there's 3 and 8 probably. There's not a whole lot. It could be any mix on depending on what team you're asking. So I prefer that, but it's not a necessary thing.
So Trotz would prefer a centerman, as he pointed out yesterday with Stillman and company. And Connor, this is an interesting spot here because this is a place the Predators really haven't been throughout the majority of their history. You've got, you know, when they came in as an expansion team, they drafted David Legwand, I think number 2 overall. And Legwand was fine, but Legwand was not a franchise-changing centerman.
Right.
They had the number 4 pick back in 2013, and the way the draft fell, they ended up taking Seth Jones. Seth Jones that year. A lot of people thought he might go one.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought he might go two. He ends up going four to the Predators. And the guy, and Willie brought this up again yesterday, the guy that most people had mocked to the Predators in 2013 at number four was Alex Barkov, who went to Florida and has now won two cups in a row and has been a huge part of that. So I guess you can think back and imagine what that could be like.
And now Seth Jones is a cup champion.
And now Seth Jones is a cup champion as well. So, Connor, this is why this pick on Friday is really interesting to me, because people were talking about this in the YouTube chat yesterday on the show too. I do think that there's a chance that Porter Martone, who's a really good winger, could be there by the time their pick comes up at number five. But if it's me, he better be head and shoulders better than one of these center prospects, just because the Predators don't get this opportunity very often to pick that position, and that position is really important. And frankly, they've not found anybody that's a number one type center at that position throughout the entire history of their franchise. And what an opportunity here to do so if you're the Predators.
Right. I'm trying to think of it in terms of, you know, the NFL, football. Center to me is obviously not the same importance, but of some level of importance as a quarterback. You don't have the opportunity to draft a guy that high, that good, very often. And the Predators are in, like you said, a unique situation where you're not going to get the top guy, but you have plenty of options there. Now, the thing is, it's not plug and play. Like, no, there are no Connor Bedards,
right,
McDavids that you're going to find in this draft that you can just throw on the ice and have immediate results. But I am interested to see. Trotz was very talkative about this yesterday, too. And I know we have the clip we'll play eventually. But he said, like, positional value. If it's close, he's probably going to take a forward. But if there's a center out there that he thinks is head and shoulders above the rest, he would probably go that route. So I'm really curious to see, you know, how does he attack the center drafting-wise? Does he think that positional value holds true to what many other draft experts believe? I would hope that's the case, because the Predators for years and years and years, as we've seen, have lacked center values. Lots of struggling in that department. So I would be curious to see where they go, for sure.
Yeah, like I think the more I look at it, I think there's plenty of center options here that Barry Trotz is going to be having to sort through. Number one, who's available? So, I mean, you know, they're picking at number five. So my guess is you're going to see a defenseman go at number one. You're going to see a combination of a couple centers off the board by the time the Predators pick comes around. And then maybe, you know, maybe some team, whether it's Chicago or whoever, takes Porter Martone, the winger, before the Predators are on the clock at five. Well, if they do that, then you're just basically, if you're Trotz, you're picking between a few centers after that. But you're gonna find a good player that's available to you there. What style is Barry Trotz looking for when it comes to what he wants out of his center? That's also another part of this, because there are some centers available. There's also some pretty different types of centermen that are available. And if you look around the NHL, like, there's not one carbon cutout of, like, what your centerman has to look like. You know, I brought up Barkov. Barkov is a very different player than McDavid, but they're very, very good in their own right. Like, McDavid is the best player in the world. Barkov is absolutely elite at what he does. He is a shutdown centerman who is a really gifted player offensively, and his two-way game is just about as good as it gets. You know, Crosby is a different player than McDavid is. McKinnon is a different player than Jack Hughes is in New Jersey. All those guys are really, really good. All those guys are number one centermen, but there are levels to it, and there are different styles in how they get it done. So, like, frankly, if I'm a Predators fan, I don't know that I really care what the style is. Just
right.
Give me one of those type of guys, and I'll worry about, you know, how he compares to Connor McDavid a little bit more down the road. But, like, if you're a Predators fan, you'll take a Hughes, you'll take a Barkov. If one of these guys that you pick turns into anything close to one of those guys, then that's a win at number five. And that's what the end goal should be, if you're Barry Trotz.
I think my worry stemming off of that is, what if Barry Trotz is drafting based off of Andrew Burnett's coaching style? We don't know how much longer Andrew Burnett's going to be around. He could be fired in mid-November.
Yeah.
We don't know. I think that's the worry for me, is that he's going to be drafting based on that offensive style when we don't know how much longer that's going to be around. Now, does that mean that those players he drafts, if he does do that, aren't going to pan out in the future? Of course not. No. They could easily latch on to a new style and, you know, figure things out and become prominent NFL players for the Predators. But I think it's just kind of the fear of the unknown for me, that I'm not sure what kind of player they're going to be looking for and how it's going to work well in their pipeline later down the line.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We are off and running today on Robbie and Rex Road. Caroline Fenton will be with her later later this hour at 645. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean coming up at 8 o'clock. Lots to get to on the Barry Trotz front from his comments yesterday. We'll get into more of that coming up next. Take your thoughts on what Trotz had to say on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
I want to ask about a specific player. Porter Martone, a really physically gifted player, great offensive player, but he doesn't play center. He plays wing.
Yep.
How much does that matter to you, the position versus the skill the player brings?
Well, there's a little bit more, probably a little bit more need, but if that player is available, you know, you can look at past drafts. I can't remember Brady Tkachuk, player that went before Brady Tkachuk. If you look at where it is now, they would probably want Brady Tkachuk, based on where players go. So we're going to look at the best player, and if there's a big discrepancy, then position won't matter. But if there's very little, then we'll probably go a little more position, that's all. But that'd be a great pick at 5.
So that was Barry Trotz yesterday. I found that to be really interesting. And a lot of GMs, I don't know, would actually come out and say it that way, even though I think a lot more GMs kind of think that way than we think. But I'm totally with Trotz on this. Like, I think Porter Martone is going to be pretty good. I think he's going to be a pretty good player. And I'm not necessarily opposed to the Predators taking him. But if it were me making the decision for the Predators, Porter Martone, having not played center, would have to be, I mean, just head and shoulders above the other prospects at that spot that you're comparing him with to make that pick. And that's how important the center position is to me. Like, it's how you win in today's NHL. And yeah, like he brought up Brady Tkachuk. Of course I'd love to have a guy like Brady Tkachuk if you're the Predators, or Matthew Tkachuk with Florida. You know, I've talked about it. There's a lot of reasons you can point to that Florida has won back-to-back cups. And Barkov's a huge part of it, and obviously Sam Bennett. Those two guys play center. They're a huge part of it. But, you know, it really kind of all started with Matthew Tkachuk. He was that finishing piece, and there's a reason they've been to 3 cup finals in a row when he's been a part of the team. So you can find extreme value in elite-level wingers. Like, I don't think there's a Predators fan out there that would not take another Philip Forsberg, even though he doesn't play center. So, you know, I understand. If you find a good enough player on the wing, then I'm cool with them playing wing and taking that player. I think the way that Barry Trotz is viewing that and that answer there is exactly the way they need to view it. If they feel like Porter Martone is just way better than James Hagans or Anton Frondell or whoever any of these other center prospects are, well, then take Porter Martone. But if you think it's pretty close, that's when positional value starts to come in pretty heavily for me.
That's why I'm looking at this mock draft from Tankathon right now. You're going to have a center prospect available, right? I mean, this one has the Preds taking James Hagans at 5, who's dropped from 2. I think that's because of injury concern. But you're going to have Frondell or Hagans or Brady Martin. Those are all projected ahead of Porter Martone. So, like you said, if you're really, really in love with the idea of Porter Martone being a prominent scorer for your offense, like a Philip Forsberg, like a, I don't know, a James Neal back in the day, we'll throw that out there. Then take him. Yeah, I had to go back to the well for that one. Then take him. But if you really want, you know, positional value, if you want arguably your team's biggest need, he's not going to play right away because, you know, pipelines and stuff like that. But if you want positional value and you want to develop a prominent center, which you need in the NHL today, then I think you start looking at positional value. I think you start looking at a James Hagans or a Anton Frondell or Brady Martin or someone like that.
Yeah, like I think a lot of Predators fans, even if Porter Martone is a really, really good prospect, which I think he is, I think a lot of Predators fans, if that's the pick on Friday, are going to throw their hands up in the air and they say, what are you doing? They're going to say, you've had all these chances and all this talk about trying to go find a centerman, and now you've got an opportunity to draft one, and you choose the winger. I think you'll see a lot of Predators fans react that way, even if it's ultimately the right decision, which, again, the problem with the NHL draft is we may not find out if it's the right or wrong decision for another 4 or 5 years. So that's kind of how – that's in the backdrop of all this. Now, Ian, there's another question on the YouTube chat, which we brought up before, that is fair, I guess, until this organization proves otherwise. And it's basically, do you trust the organization, number one, to make the right pick, and number two, if they do, to develop that forward properly?
Yeah.
And this is a big moment for this franchise because they've not really developed one of their own draft picks into one of these superstar-level forwards.
Well, they've also never drafted a forward fifth overall other than David Legwand that high.
Yep.
So, I mean, you're talking one and done as far as that chance goes. That was, you know, so long ago. So maybe you give him a chance with some high-end skill. I mean, Fiala turned out okay.
He did.
I mean,
it'd be nice to have him right now.
Not technically, you know, not fully developed here, but kind of. You know, some of the other ones did not. We've gone through the list plenty of times. I don't think we need to rehash all the first-round forwards that haven't worked out.
There's been a lot.
But, hey, like, you know, you got to hope. If you're talking number five overall, you got the, you know, high-end skills that some of them may have lacked otherwise, and see what you can do.
Well, that's the thing. Like, there is a big difference in the NHL, Connor, of a top five pick and then, you know, 10, 12, 11, 15, somewhere 9, in that area.
Yeah.
Like, it just, for whatever reason, in the NHL, like, you can look in the NFL and you can look all over the place.
Right.
And you can find somebody that was taken 23rd overall in the first round that is just an absolutely elite player. And you can find some of that in the NHL. But by and large, when you look at it, when you look at McDavid and Dreisaitl and McKinnon and Barkov and all these guys, Crosby, like, they're all, for the most part, drafted somewhere in the top five. Like, that's just the way it goes for the most part in the NHL. So an opportunity here for the Predators to find one of those guys. And look, I do think there's a pretty wide range here of outcomes that you could consider a success if you're the Predators at number five. Like, whoever they draft Friday doesn't have to turn into Connor McDavid. That's right. A heck of a bar. Like, but, like, you know, I also don't want, if I'm a Predators fan, like, I don't want the pick on Friday to turn into David Legwand. And, you know, no disrespect to David Legwand. He was a good player here for a long time. But David Legwand was like a number two center or maybe a high-end three for the majority of his career. And he holds a lot of records the Predators have, and that's basically because he played here for 15 years. Like, there's a longevity part of it that comes into it. Like, there's a baseline of, like, I want whoever they pick at number five here at the center spot to be a bona fide number one or number two center for them for the next decade.
Yeah.
That's what you need here.
You need more than just a good player. There's no Hall of Good here. We need – I'm not saying you need a surefire Hall of Famer, but you need a damn good player for your franchise. You also need it to pan out. I mean, look at the talent that has come up from Milwaukee as of late. Luke Evangelista had a good first year. He was pretty terrible last year. You've had some others that haven't panned out. I mean, Phil Tomasino is no longer here.
Tolvanen's not here.
Yes.
I mean, you can go down.
You can go down the list.
If you go look at it from basically 2014 until now, there's not a real high-level draft pick that they have developed and retained that's with them. Like, you know, Saros was drafted, and that's probably the last one that's still with them right now that is an actual impactful player. And, you know, one of those players that you look at and you're like, okay, we're gonna build some of our franchise around that guy. Like, they're on and you understand some of it because they were in a window from basically 2016 until probably 2019, 2020, where they were just going for it every year, and they were trading away first-round picks, and they were trading away prospects. And when you do that, ultimately that catches up to you in your prospect pool at some point. But now, like, since basically 2021, they've done a decent job of restocking their prospects and their draft profile here. But they still don't have, in my opinion, and we'll see, maybe Tanner Mullendyke changes that. But they still don't have, like, that stud player. And they need this guy, whoever it is, to be a stud player. And frankly, beyond that, they need, you know, whoever else they pick in the first round or early in the second round, they need to hit on probably one more of those to go with this to really accelerate some of the growth here.
I'd argue they still need to hit on some that still haven't come up yet.
I would agree.
Joakim Kimmel, Fedor Svechkov still remains to be seen. He looked all right at times last year, but they need youth. As Jared says, they have too many pawpaws out there. So they need youth. They need, you know, Trotz talks about how they want to be fast and young, and then he brings in guys that, you know, I think slow them down and make them a little bit older. So I think by drafting, you know, a top young prospect, it's going to help them out a lot, and they absolutely need it to hit. A
couple other quick hitters on the draft part of this that Trotz touched on yesterday that I want to get to. We'll have Caroline Fenton coming up at 6:45, getting into some college football with her. Barry Trotz talked about some of the current roster and his approach to that, which we'll get to in the 7 o'clock hour. All that's coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
When you look at a possible trade for 5, would it have to be another draft pick to add a young core player? Or is there a possibility that there could be such a good current NHL player that you would be willing to give up that pick?
I can tell you there's current NHL good players that I would willing to do that. Just no one's offered me that. But I think having 5, you know, we haven't drafted for so long. I would have loved to stay at 3 because then I can control a little bit more of that. But that's not the case. We're at 5, but we're like I say, we're going to get a good player that we'll be happy with. But you know, we're getting some good traction. You're going to start seeing these young guys come through the you know, like I said, you said Kemmel and Schaefer. You know, guy Stiga is going to have a really good year. He played a lot with James Higgins. You know, we got players like that. You got Surin, who just won a championship in Russia. Who's a really a player that drives stuff. And you know, you got Tanner Mullendyke, Gibson coming out of junior this year. So Cole O'Hare, who was a second team All Star, first team All Star in I think it was Hockey East. You know, so we've got some really good people coming. So you're gonna start seeing them.
That's Barry Trotz yesterday. I found that interesting. You know, he basically said there, like, man, if you give me a good enough offer at number 5 and there's a high-level player there, yeah, I'll listen. I'll take that.
As he should.
Doesn't sound like that's going to happen, though, and that's not a huge surprise. Like, to me, you know, I know we've had a couple people ask us about would you trade the number 5 overall pick for a player that can really help you now. And I guess I would, but my list of players that I would trade the number 5 overall pick for right now if I'm the Predators is pretty short. Like, to me, and he can't say this because all these guys are under contract, but to me, if you're trading me number 5, I better be getting back, like, Sam Reinhart from the Florida Panthers or something like that. Like, you know, obviously, you know, McDavid, McKinnon, but not like it's not even worth bringing up. But like, if you're trading, if you're wanting to get number 5 overall, you better be getting me a player that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt is a great player that could help me right now. And that offer's just not coming. Like, I don't think that's coming at that point. So the other interesting part of that, we've had a lot of people ask us about the Predators and could they move around in the draft. Like, could they take the number 5 pick, package it with something, and then move up to number 2 or number 3 and draft there? And I think part of what that answer told me is that that's just going to be really hard to do. Like, there's all kinds of people wanting to move up in the draft. And to this point, there just really hasn't been, according to Trotz, much of a willingness to listen on that for some of these teams that are higher up. So who knows? I mean, maybe that changes by the time Friday rolls around, but we're getting pretty close to the time where if you're going to consider making one of those deals, if you're one of those teams, be that a San Jose, a Chicago, whoever, that you got to start putting the framework of that together. So my expectation is, like, if you're expecting the Predators to move around and not pick at number 5, that you're going to be disappointed with that coming up on Friday, and that number 5 is going to be where they land, and yeah, that's going to be what it is.
I don't think anyone is moving in the top 5, really. I think, like you said, there's not much of a willingness to listen. I think everyone's kind of complacent with where they are picking, and everyone kind of has in mind, especially in the top 3, where they're going. So I wouldn't expect the Predators to move up or down. Now, later rounds, I could totally see a move where you have, you know, they have all this capital. They have 3 first-round picks. I don't know how many, maybe pick 26, which belongs to Vegas. Maybe they ship that down to move to get second and a third or something like that. But as far as, you know, pick number 5, I think you could expect them to 100% be picking on Friday at number 5.
To me, the question of the draft for the Predators, beyond who they pick at number 5, because that's number 1. But I think the second most important question in this draft for the Predators, to me, and what I'm looking for on Friday night, are they going to actually pick all 3 of those first-round picks? Or does one of those 2 first-round picks in the 20s, are they able to package that and go get somebody that helps right now? And we're going to get into the helping right now part of this in the 7 o'clock hour, because I think Barry Trotz said some things yesterday that make me think they could have some things up their sleeve over the next week or two here before NHL free agency begins for next year's team. But that to me, beyond whoever they take at number 5 and what the board ends up looking like at that point, that's the big question of the draft. Are they actually going to stick and pick with all 3 of their first rounders? Or as they're kind of looking through this here, is there a player on another team that becomes available that the Predators feel like they can package one of these first rounders to go get and help them right now?
Right. And I think that's something I would look forward to too, because that's where if Barry Trotz wants to be win now, then you have to go do that. You have to go get someone who can score you goals, which they didn't have last year. They thought they did with, you know, Stamkos and Marchessault coming in, but both of them had down years. And, you know, Barry talked about the Marchessault stuff yesterday too.
Which he did.
Doesn't have a lot of weight to it, doesn't seem like. But yes, I agree. You need to maybe package some of those picks. I have a hard time believing they're going to stick and pick at all 3 of those picks. So maybe package one, go get, you know, a Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or someone like that, a young enough goal scorer that can help you right now. I'm not saying specifically Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, that's just an example.
Sure.
But I agree, you need to, I think you should package one of those number 23 or 26 or something like that. Go get someone that can help you now and see where it lands you coming up on the season.
Joel on the text line saying, I thought Frank Saravalli said the Blackhawks were open to move off number 3. I think everybody is quote-unquote open to it this time of year. Like, very rarely are you going to see a general manager, unless they're picking like number 1, come out and say, yeah, there's no way we're moving this pick. Because, like, if you're Chicago, you know, what if somebody at the last minute just offers you an unbelievable help to you right now? Like a player that – it's like, okay, well, that guy can play with Connor Bedard, and we'll do it. So, like, I people are open to it. I think you got to be real careful this time of year. Like, what does open to it actually mean? Like, are you listening to realistic offers, or are you hoping that somebody offers you the moon? Like, that's, to me, if I'm picking in the top five, and I realize that Chicago has been very familiar with the top five the last couple of years, and they've made some really good selections, I think, and we'll see how those end up playing out in the next few years. I still, it takes a lot to get these teams to move out of there. And the other part of this is, how much is worth it if you're the Predators? Like, is it worth it to put together a package, and probably a pretty hefty one, to get one of these teams to move out, whether it's Chicago or Utah or whoever's in front of you? Is it worth, like, is there that much of a difference between who you've got ranked number three on your board and who you've got ranked number five on your board that you're worried about giving up that much? Like, if you listen to Barry Trotz, I think the answer to that's probably no. Like, he said yesterday that he doesn't see a ton of difference from, like, the third guy on the board to the eighth guy on the board, which tells me there's probably not going to be a ton of willingness for Barry Trotz to offer a package to move up that's really that significant.
Yeah, and why would you? Why would you take a risk like that in a draft like this where there's no top, you know, generational talent? Why would you? Why would you? You're more better off just sticking where you are in the top five, taking whatever falls to you, or the best of whatever falls to you. Positional value, like we talked about, comes into play. You have to look at, you know, who do you think will fit your franchise long term? Do you want to take a top center that can help you and, you know, could be a franchise guy that doesn't come around often? You need a top center in the NHL to succeed. It's just a fact. Do you want to take maybe a forward? Barry Trotz sounds like he likes the idea of taking a forward. There's a lot of questions going into it, but the message of this is, no, I wouldn't, you know, sacrifice all my draft capital to move up a couple spots for not a sure thing.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Caroline Fenton will be with us coming up next. We'll get her thoughts on all things college football and a couple Titans questions to get to with her as well. We will get back into the Predators to begin the 7 o'clock hour. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean coming up at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Connor Newt. Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Talk a little college ball, and to help us do that, we head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Caroline Fenton from Yahoo Sports, Sirius XM. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm so happy to be on with you. How are we doing?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm very happy to have you with us on the program this morning. Caroline, I want to start here because I think this is going to be a big talking point heading into the year. You know, the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier, came out yesterday and was talking about Arch Manning and basically said what Rex Rhodes has been saying for a few weeks, which is, well, everybody thinks he's just going to be all good. He wasn't able to beat out Quinn Ewers last year, and he was a seventh-round pick. So how good is he really going to be? What do you make of the Arch Manning hype, everything surrounding him heading into this year? How good will he be in his first year as a starter?
So I half agree. I agree that we should all be pumping the brakes on Arch Manning. And look, he was a five-star quarterback, one of the highest-rated quarterbacks coming out of high school ever, and his last name is Manning. So there's going to be just astronomical expectations for the kid. But we have seen him play a little bit against Mississippi State, and we have seen him start against UTSA. So maybe we can pump the brakes a little bit, because when I look across the SEC, we saw Lenora Sellers as a true freshman get legitimate starting experience, DJ Lagway get legitimate starting experience, Marcel Reed get legitimate starting experience against SEC caliber programs. And they won games against SEC caliber programs. We haven't seen that with Arch Manning. I think there's reason for optimism, just given what we've seen from him and the athleticism, the way that he can run, the way that he can sling it, you know, the weapons that he has around him. Of course there's reason for optimism. Let's pump the brakes, though, on Arch Manning is the next greatest gift to the state of Texas. What I disagree with, though, is he couldn't beat out Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers brought Texas to the Final Four in the college football playoff 2 years in a row. Yes, he was a seventh-round pick. I think that has less to do with his ability and more to do with his availability. I mean, I don't think Quinn Ewers had a single season where he played all 12-plus games in a Texas uniform. So I don't think that we're talking about Quinn Ewers and what he did for Texas and how good and solid and reliable he was for Texas. Like, just because Arch Manning couldn't beat out the incumbent starter who is coming off of a college football playoff season doesn't mean that he's some sort of bump. But I think all reasons for optimism for Arch Manning, but like, let's just breathe a little bit and let's understand that he's probably going to have some growing pains, that he might not be Peyton Manning in an Indianapolis Colts uniform day one.
Caroline, on a more national scale, as far as quarterbacks, in a year where, you know, you look across the board, there's no Joe Burrow, there's no Trevor Lawrence, there's no true top number one guy. What do you think a Garrett Nussmeier out of LSU or a Cade Klubnik out of Clemson or Drew Aller out of Penn State, what do you think those guys need to do to shore up that number one top guy position?
Yeah, well, let's not play revisionist history here. When Joe Burrow was going into the 2019 season at LSU, he wasn't Joe Burrow. Like, Joe Burrow had a good, not great season at LSU in 2018. Like, nobody was talking about him being a potential Heisman contender. So that's kind of how I view this year, is which is going to be the guy that really steps up as, quote-unquote, the guy. I think another name to keep an eye on is Sam Leavitt at Arizona State. Obviously, Arizona State is not the same caliber of program as Clemson or LSU or Penn State, like those quarterbacks that you just mentioned. But Sam Leavitt played in the college football playoff last year. And let's not forget that Arizona State took Texas down to the wire. That game was won by Texas in overtime. That was incredibly slim margins. So I think, you know, what do those guys need to do to separate themselves? But what I think that, you know, first of all, we'll see Cade Klubnik and Garrett Nussmeier face off in week one. I mean, there will kind of be your deciding factor there. But I think with LSU and with Penn State, and I guess I'll throw Clemson in there as well, one thing that all of those programs can do very well is beat the teams that they are supposed to beat. What they can't do is beat the teams that they're not supposed to beat. Like, LSU can beat South Carolina. Like, LSU can beat Ole Miss. But can LSU beat Clemson week one? Can LSU beat Alabama on a consistent basis? Penn State can beat Iowa and Minnesota. But can Drew Aller beat Ohio State and Michigan? So that's what I think is going to ultimately separate not just those teams as, you know, playoff contenders versus championship contenders. That's going to be what separates those top quarterbacks, is which is the guy that can elevate their team, which is the guy that can put the team on their back and say, okay, no, I got this. Kind of like what we saw from Cam Ward this past season, or Jaden Daniels the year before, like the F it, I got it kind of guy. That's going to be ultimately what separates these quarterbacks that we view as the top quarterbacks in the country from each other.
So, Caroline, we saw Tennessee make the college football playoff last year on the back of a really good running game, a really good defense, and I thought Nico got better as the year went on. Obviously, he's gone now, so they still have a chance to have a good defense. Is he? Is he gone?
I wonder what happened.
It's kind of a came out of nowhere. With their quarterback situation, whether it's Aguilar, which is where I think it'll go, or who knows, maybe Merklinger comes into camp and he just lights it up. How much of a concern is that spot? How much of a limitation could that spot be for Tennessee this year, based on the unknown of what is there with the young guys and Aguilar, who has played a lot but has played at a lower level heading into this year?
Yeah, it's funny. So I was at a friend of mine's lake house a couple of months ago, and his parents are diehard Tennessee fans, and his dad asked me, "What do you think about Aguilar?" And I was like, who the hell is Aguilar? I was like, oh, yeah. That kid from UCLA, that kid that transferred into Tennessee. So it's a far cry from last season going into for Tennessee going into the season of, like, you know, Nico Iamaleava was the name in the mouths of every single person in college football, it felt like. And now I'm like, wait, who's their quarterback again? It's a limitation. Like, it's exactly what it is. that we're going into a year, into a style of Josh Heupel's play where they want to sling the football. They want to score points. And we all know what Josh Heupel's system is. So to go into this season and not even know who the quarterback is, like I want to make sure that Tennessee fans keep the same energy now or maybe a couple of months ago when it was announced that Tennessee was releasing Nico, that yes, Josh Heupel and the Tennessee football program and the Tennessee athletic department did the right thing and made the right decision in letting Nico Yanalava go and not bending the knee to him and giving him what he wanted, not necessarily what they viewed his value as. That was the right decision for that program and for college football. But understanding that that's going to hurt this year. And maybe it doesn't. Look, surprise me. Like, Josh Heupel has been a quarterback whisperer in the past. Maybe he can do it again. But there are going to be some growing pains, and there are going to be some not so very fun games that are being played for Tennessee, I think, because of that decision. I don't want Tennessee fans to be all upset and, you know, fire Josh Heupel and this team stinks and this coach stinks in November when they're going, you know, and on the trajectory to go 8-4 or 7-5. Because ultimately, Tennessee made the right decision, but it was going to involve some growing pains. So, yes, I think it's a limitation. No, I don't think Tennessee is going to be a college football playoff contender this year. And that's okay.
Well, we know the Tennessee fan base is very rational. I'm sure they'll handle it that way. Caroline, great stuff
as
always.
That's why I say that, Robbie. I say it today on June 25th because I'm not having this conversation in October. I can't. I can't do it.
Oh, it's going to happen. I can't wait for it. Caroline. We know you got things to do this morning. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
Appreciate y'all, as always. Have a good one.
You as well. Caroline Fenton with us here on the program. That part of it is going to be very interesting to see what happens here with Tennessee. And look, I have no idea. I hear Tennessee fans who say, you know, Nico had a lot of hype. It's probably not going to be all that hard to replicate his actual production last year.
Sure.
And I get that. I see that. I am very interested to see how their quarterback spot is going to, number one, be filled out, and number two, how productive Heupel is going to be able to get them this year with some other huge question marks on the offensive side of the ball, too.
I mean, you know what's going to happen at one point. Joey Aguilar is going to go out and throw, you know, 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, and Tennessee Twitter is going to crown him the savior of Volunteer football. It's going to happen because, like you said, Tennessee Twitter's pretty rational bunch. They're pretty level-headed. They keep to themselves. I don't know. It's just a lot of questions. I if you ask me right now who is better, Joey Aguilar or Merklinger, I'd probably say Aguilar, but I don't think it's by much. I don't think he's head and shoulders above Jake Merklinger.
I'm really interested to see if Merklinger can make that a legitimate decision for Heupel by the time camp comes around.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I know that even before all the Nico stuff, Tennessee was apparently pretty high on Merklinger in the camp that he was having. We'll see what that means by the time fall camp comes around. I mean, Aguilar has a ton of experience. Like I said, it's been at a lower level, so we'll see what that all looks like. Quarterback for them this year and what sort of production they're going to be able to get, that's going to be one of the big things we're talking about throughout the course of the college football season. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. There was a take yesterday from our friend Stilly that I think we watched just go up in flames throughout the course of his show that I'm excited to get to coming up next. We will get into that. Make sure this Friday you join us at Bridgestone Arena for a party like no other and celebrate the future of Smashville at the Nashville Predators 2025 NHL Draft Party. More details at thegamenashville.com/events. You can catch 102.5 The Game's Draft Night in Nashville, Draft Night in Smashville on Friday, which I will be a part of alongside Max Herz, and we'll have Al Gill and Chris Mason and some others joining us throughout the course of the show. That starts at 6, and it's powered by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 429. So looking forward to that coming up on Friday. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.